welcome to Leo Roundtable at leoroundtable.com. My name is Chip DeBlanc, and I'm your host for a group of law enforcement professionals that talk about law enforcement issues in the news, but from a law enforcement perspective. I'm going to go and introduce the panelists. And guys, if you don't mind waiting for the video portion of our show, we have attorney and former federal prosecutor Ward Mythaler. We also have retired Chief John Newman, retired Captain Brett Bartlett, retired Corporal David D. Gresta, and most recently retired Andrea Casal, and we also have producer Will Statzer. So thanks, guys, for being on the show. We really appreciate it. And also a shout out to our sponsors and the people we're getting information from. We are sponsored this evening by Column Case Management, Extra Duty Solutions. We've got Guardian Alliance Technologies, gunlearn.com, and Viridian Weapon Technologies. We'll have more information about them later. And we are also syndicating the radio 5 days a week through Good Talk Radio. And also a lot of our information is coming from the Free Press. And so thanks to Brian Burns for helping make that happen. Well, guys, we're on PoliceOne.com. Police agencies pulling out of DNC security agreement. So we're in Milwaukee. It says more than 100 police agencies are withdrawing from agreements to send personnel to bolster security at next month's And I guess this was written in July, so it would be this month's Democratic National Convention in Milwaukee, and in part because they're concerned about a recent directive ordering police in the city to stop using tear gas to control crowds. Makes sense to me. A Citizen Oversight Commission last week directed Milwaukee's police chief to publicly account for why the department used tear gas during protests in late May and early June after the killing of George Floyd in Minneapolis, and then changed Milwaukee's police policies to ban the use of tear gas and pepper spray. Now, the Milwaukee Fire and Police Commission said it in its order that police chief Alfonso Morales could actually be fired if he fails to comply. And the convention scheduled for August the 17th or the 20th at the Wisconsin Center in downtown Milwaukee. It's been scaled down to mostly a virtual event with only about 300 people expected to attend in person. But then I've got another article saying federal officers are using more marked SUVs. They're changing military-style fatigues after being criticized as well. So there's all these changes going on. Captain Bartlett, what do you make of all that?
I hope they have a full Democratic convention, mask and COVID notwithstanding. Because you remember, Chip, back in 1968, when they had all the violence at one of the conventions, it wasn't the Republican convention. It was a Democratic National Convention that saw all the rioting. And if I remember correctly, it was in Chicago. Not that they're going to hold it there, but it's still up that way. I would pay money to go sit, find a shady spot, get a Coke and some popcorn and watch that mayhem. Because no matter what happens, they eat their own people, and they're not gonna try that crap with the Republican National Convention if they have one. So I'm hoping the Democrats do it. I'm hoping all the cops pulled out. I hope, except now this is hard to say, but you know, because there's people going to get injured. Other than the fact that people are going to get injured and hurt, I would love to see those people just turn on themselves. And with Joe Biden at the head of all, of course, he's going to forget where he's at. It's going to be beautiful. And I would just love to see that. I pay-per-view. I hope to have a pay-per-view Democratic National Convention.
Dude, I would so love to rent an RV. If it was safe, Brett, I'd rent an RV, and we should all go up there and do a live show broadcast like John's been wanting to do. We should just do one up there. If we had any stones, that's what we would do. Right, Andrea?
Absolutely. I was just going to say that, you know, I'm sick of hearing Milwaukee, you know, get Sheriff Clark back in there. And I'm like, let's go. Like, I love him. He's awesome. I lived in Wisconsin for 9 years. Put him back in there.
David Clark. Good guy. All right. So there's an article I skipped over without realizing it. TampaFreePress.com or TampaFP.com. It's the Free Press. Now they got a couple articles. Back to Blue mural in Tampa overnight on Sunday. So they actually built it's talking about them building the mural in Tampa, but there's an update to it too. There's a group of about 40 people. They wanted to show support for law enforcement. They painted the mural next to the Tampa Police Department on East Madison Street. And they did it, a week ago. One of the event organizers, Kristen Crutch, said that to the Free Press, "Thank you, officers, for the sacrifices you make every single day. We love our city. Appreciate the men and women in blue that protect it." It's 190 feet long, 22 feet tall, or 22 foot tall letters, and it's the first Back the Blue mural to be painted in a major city. And two groups were involved with it: Back the Blue Florida and Community Patriots of Tampa. Well, lo and behold, The mural was defaced with paint and tar just a few days later, and they say they don't know who did it. I know there's plans to fix it, but of course they've got to wait for permits and all this other kind of crap. But of course, if you're Black Lives Matter and you want to do a mural in the street or whatever, apparently you don't have to get a permit if you're in Tampa. So interesting.
If that's because the mayor will come out and help you paint it.
Oh, that would
sorry,
be a good
sorry,
point.
Brett. That's your girl there, the mayor of Tampa now. She'll help them paint it, but won't.
We got divorced. We're legally separated.
But surprise, it got defaced.
Andrea?
Well, and I know that there's been a question of whether or not permits were pulled, and I mean, there's a lot of drama back and forth with that. It's just sad to see, and after working for, you know, when she's Chief Caster, after working for her, you know, I wasn't very pleased with obviously watching her. She's basically turned against the police department, so it's really sad. But it was really cool to see the mural, you know, and everybody kind of backing that whole thing. What pisses me off is that we didn't sit there and have somebody guard that, because they put things out on social media saying, grab your buckets of paint, you know, be here, you know, we'll let you know where to be. They basically said that they were going to do it. And obviously I'm sure they said, you know, hey, let's kind of 10:30, let's stay away from that area, and whatever happens, happens. So it pisses me off. They knew that it was coming. I don't know why that wasn't kind of guarded and we didn't kind of, you know, heighten some security over in that area, but I guess it's, you know, that all is going to be controversial, whether or not permits were pulled and all that crap. But it makes me sick that she sits there and she does the Black Lives Matter, but God forbid we do the back the blue. I have no support for her.
I heard it through the grapevine that it's not official, and it's not officially sanctioned by anybody, but I heard they were looking for snipers to sit on the rooftop of Big Blue. And I heard there was vacant space on City Hall and also in the Sykes building across the park. I'm just throwing it out there. They were looking for people. Like, I'm thinking, you know, Tommy Downs.
I'll go. I'm a volunteer. I even got the badge. I got the volunteer because I volunteered some in the past. I'll go.
Well, people would go and watch that. They, like I said, they put it out there on social media. Why didn't we sit there, you know, and have at least somebody sitting by? They put the day, they put the time. They just said, hey, well, the place, the location will be, will be announced. Where do you think it's going to be? It was 2 days after they painted that. It just, come on, they knew it was coming.
Well, while they're out there painting over it and then going home to their mother's basements to play Xbox and eat Cheetos, we're out there working, barbecuing, enjoying our lives, working and having productive activity when these piece of little skinny little trollop man bun wearing pieces of crap are out there marching around the street because they didn't get enough ass whippings when they were little.
But they're getting paid to do it. I mean, they don't have to go to work. Why we don't have to go to work. We're getting a check. So why not?
I was downtown 2 weeks ago and I was just in a parking lot getting ready to leave. And a couple of protesters came up there, and they had masks that says "Dump Dugan," you know, Chief Dugan. And I yelled out, "Keep Dugan!" And they, you know, we had a few words back and forth. And then I turned my phone on to record that, and it turns out they don't like that. They don't like it. Man, their eyes lit up, and they were just flittering around like the little pieces of crap, little roaches they are, just skittering around. And then they left, and I forgot about them.
I forgot until now.
Very good, guys. All right, we got some video action coming up here. We went through a lot of videos last week. You know, I had some downtime and we didn't have the panel live show, so we were able to get caught up on some videos because we've really got a backlog of some really good videos. These are pretty recent, though. Police1.com, this video is of a fatal officer-involved shooting released by Austin officials. This is Austin, Texas. Police in Austin, they released a video on Monday of an officer fatally shooting an unarmed man in April as he drove away. So the video shows the killing of Mike Ramos. He's a Black and Hispanic man. It happened on April the 24th, and it recounts what police had previously described. It says after officers address him by his name multiple times, Ramos follows orders given by police, and he gets out of the car with his hands and his shirt raised. Now, he then turns around once in a circle toward the open driver's side door. And I knew what was going to happen, David, before I even watched it, as if to show. But he's doing all this, following orders kind of reluctantly, but doing it as if to show that he had no gun in his waistband. And twice says, "Don't shoot," while leaning against his open door. And I highlight the word open. Ramos later tells police he does not have a gun. So after imploring him multiple times to step away from the vehicle, no one told him to close the door, David. Police shoot Ramos, 42 years old, with less lethal beanbag round, and before he gets back into his car. And it looked like that kind of what started his movement back into the car. Officers immediately tell him to turn off the vehicle, and he doesn't do it. He drives away. At least one officer fires multiple times, striking him fatally. Officers Mitchell Piper and Christopher Taylor, they were involved in the shooting, and Officer Piper fired one less lethal round at Ramos, striking him in the upper thigh and hip area, and Officer Taylor fired three rounds from his rifle at Ramos as he drove forward. And it says that a 911 caller told police, I guess, that in the car they were doing drugs and stuff, and there was a man in the car who was armed, and Ramos was not found to be armed or anything, but Austin Mayor Steve Adler called the shooting disturbing. So that's nice. The mayor's weighing in. And at the time of the incident, Piper, one of the cops, had been with the Austin department for 3 months and was in his field training phase, and Taylor had been with the department for 5 years. So that's the way that video went down. I thought it was an interesting video. David, would love to get some comments from you on that.
Yeah, interesting video. I don't know whatever happened to pegging a car in place. Why don't people do that anymore? I've never, you know,
explain to our listeners, David, what you're talking about.
You know, in the beginning of the video, you see these officers, and they gather up and they say, "Hey, listen, this guy over here, we know he's wanted, this, that, whatever. He's a bad guy. This is what we're going to do." Okay, fine. But at that point in time, you've got to immobilize that vehicle. You must. If you do not, you are asking for a problem. So somebody, usually, like Brett said, if you have a Crown Vic in a holster, you use that. But otherwise, you're going to use, you know, whatever vehicle you have at your disposal, hopefully maybe a big SUV or something like that. You're going to go around and you're going to block that vehicle in. In the current way that the vehicle was parked, it was backed into a spot. Up to a curb, you bring your front push bumper into contact with the front of that car. And if you happen to cause his airbag to go off, that's even better. But you bring the front of your vehicle into the contact with the front of his vehicle, and then you roll out of your car, out the driver's door, and take cover behind it if you believe he has a gun. And now you've immobilized the vehicle. The car's not going anywhere at that point. And then you can start to deal with the guy. And now you've given him pretty much a straightforward indication of how this is going to go. We've stopped you. You're not going anywhere. So let's give ourselves up and we'll deal with the situation. But the way that it went down, they came up, they formed, you know, a semicircle around the front of him, obviously did not block him in because he was able to drive away, give him some decent orders to follow. But then he decides to get back in his car and drive away. And then you fire on him. I mean, I'm kind of with the mayor. This is disturbing. The tactics, or the lack thereof, of the key tactics to allow this scenario or cause this scenario to end the way that you want it to end, and take away his ability to bring some sort of variable into it that you can't control, is your fault. You've got to do what you have to do to control that scene from the beginning. And they did not. And then it evolved. They responded, in my opinion, from what I saw and what the information that I have, not well. I don't foresee this going well for the police.
Got you. Well, thanks. And Ward and Andrew, before you guys go, I want to talk to our listeners about something that's affecting our law enforcement agencies nationwide right now. Our country's crying out for accountability around who we hire to serve and protect them. I've had a front row seat and not only seen, but also experiencing the flaws in vetting and hiring law enforcement officers. So it doesn't have to be this way. And our friends at Guardian Alliance Technologies, they actually have the solution. Guardian has developed the CJIS compliant background investigation software platform. It helps you uncover potentially problematic applicants in record time while also helping you to ensure that you have the best quality officer serving. There's no upfront fees, no training fees, installation costs, or long-term contracts, or even commitment. So I strongly recommend visiting them today at guardianalliancetechnologies.com. Guys, it's all about hiring the right people, and they're really good about helping the agency do that and also limiting your liability at the same time. So that said, Ward, Andrea, and John, the floor is yours, guys, on the same video.
I'm not sure why it was necessary to shoot the beanbag gun, although I sort of get it because he wasn't fully compliant. As a layperson, I really don't understand why lethal force was employed at all, because I didn't perceive him to be a threat to the police officers at that point. I will also add that I don't understand why AP, once again, refers to this man as black and Hispanic, whatever that means, other than their continuing attempt to stir the racial pot.
Good. Good call, Ward. Andrea and John, go ahead.
So I'm just going to try and answer Dave's question there, for which really wasn't a question, but part of the reason why they didn't, which I feel like just leaving law enforcement, it seems like we underact so many times. The going up and pinning the car in doesn't seem to be okay anymore. I don't know how many times we say you need to go in, hit it hard, let them know who's in charge, take control of a situation, and then, you know, everything will kind of fall into place from there. It's always easier to go in with a little bit more and then back off. But unfortunately, I'm going to tell you right now, there were a number of times where I had supervision that, no, you don't pin that car in. I would have pinned the car in, but you're told not to pin the car in because liability. First of all, they don't want to fill out a risk management form. God forbid you put any damage on that car. They don't want to sit there and be wrong about the information that they received from somebody, you know, on a call when they called in and said that he was armed, which, to answer, you know, Ward's, that's the reason why the less lethal was used, was because they were told he was armed and he wasn't. You know, answer. He wasn't replying. He wasn't sitting there complying with what they've asked him to do. But that answers those questions. We get information from dispatch based on the questions that we asked. You sit there, somebody has a firearm, they're holding it to her head. You know, they have all of those things. Officers go in with that information. So from a layperson's, you know, standpoint, they're not used to hearing that stuff. As an officer, that's the information that you use to go in to react to a situation. If they're going to tell us, no, you don't pin that car in, you need to back off, you need to sit there. I mean, unfortunately, what we're seeing, we're going to see it from use of force, we're going to see it from, you know, any of those standpoints, we are underacting. Yes, that car should have been pinned in, but supervisors don't want you to do that anymore. And I'll take on any supervisor that sits there and tells me that, oh, no, it's okay to do that, because I don't know how many times I was told in a situation to underact. So we're going to see people hurt more on both sides, law enforcement and on the citizen side, because we're too afraid of liability and to fill out those risk management forms of, God forbid, there's any damage to any property.
Thanks, Andrea. And you're not taking on any supervisors until you take on Ward first. That's the mandate. But go ahead, Chief John.
Look, supervisor or not, to Andrea's comment, you're gonna get a piece of my car. I'll fill out the forms. I'll sign the 613. I'll even leave it blank, and you can fill in the lines. I don't care. Because to Dave's point, I got to tell you something. I was looking at it from the shooting, but I said the same thing Dave did, not nearly as eloquent. I was like, I don't like how we got here, but let's see what happens next. You know what I mean? Like, why are we doing this? And then I'm with Ward I, and everyone else. I think the shooting's got some problems. I didn't see that, you know, that it didn't rise to the level for me for, you know, deadly force. But to Dave's point, I didn't like the way they got there. It wasn't decisive. It wasn't the best way. But I was looking at it in terms of the shooting. So my response was, well, we're here now. Let's see what happens next. And that's how I looked at the shooting. But I agree with Ward. And Dave and even Andrea, that they're going to have problems with this based on what we're looking at.
And to follow that up even further from what Andrea said, the only way I can to really say it is the logic is flawed then, Andrew, because if you have officers that are being told don't overact and they end up shooting a guy that's driving away, that is the absolute definition of overact. So you can't, as a responding officer, you either do nothing and stay out of it, or you do what you feel you have to do to keep yourself and your compadres and the potential victim that's in the car with this guy as safe as possible. So I have difficulty at this point critiquing cops that I see on video doing certain things, because now it's a requirement to build in the second guessing thing that has been thrust upon them so strongly now that the argument of you got to do what's right no longer carries as much weight. But the generalized tactics, regardless of what the supervision is going to say, were just wrong.
So just to touch on that, I'm just going to say, through my experience in almost, 19 years of law enforcement, unfortunately, I got to see how it used to be versus how it is now. And it's changed so much. And I worked with some phenomenal officers. And then I worked with a lot of people who had their hands tied in what they do. And it's definitely a lot more of, we had very smart, very well-trained officers when I first got hired, to the point where they tie your hands, later on down the road. So it's very unfortunate. And in a situation like this, just like you're going to see in many situations, we're constantly second guessing what we can and can't do. And I think that you do. I mean, I don't know how many times, like I said, we've said it a number of times, go in, hit them hard, hit them fast. That's one reason why I think I got injured in the line of duty, because that was my mentality. Nobody else is coming to back you up. They are afraid to overact because they're afraid they're going to get in trouble. I could have cared less, because I'm going to go in, I'm going to do what I feel is right. I'm going to, do what I was trained to do. But you're talking about a different breed that's coming in now to law enforcement. And it's only going to get worse because of what we're seeing in today's world. It's they're going to underact, and it's unfortunate.
Thanks, Andrea. All right, guys, we got about 15 minutes left, and we've got some good videos to cover, so hopefully we'll get to all of them. Police1.com, on this video, California police, they shoot a man who pointed a gun at them, and this is in Sacramento. Sacramento police released this body camera footage on Monday of officers fatally shooting a 22-year-old man last week at an apartment complex near Sacramento State. The video shows this confrontation between police and Jeremy Southern. It happened on July the 21st. Now, Southern, our bad guy, is seen pointing the gun at officers for 90 seconds. That's a minute and a half. Officers gave 28 commands for him to drop the gun before they fired at Southern twice. Now, the videos released on Monday, they show officers following on foot as Southern, our bad guy, and a female companion. They walk in the Crossings apartment complex. It houses more than 700 students. So I'm going into that detail for our non-Leos because, we have to weigh the totality of the circumstances. So the fact that there's all these housing unit there with all these 700 students, that's a big deal. Sacramento police said that the two officers were at the complex to collect surveillance footage from a shooting that occurred there on another date. And while there, the officers recognized the suspect from the shooting, and he was walking through the complex. Officers quickly approach him. They get behind Southern as he walks into the courtyard. They pull their weapons, identify Southern by name, and give commands for him to put his hands up. Now, Southern, he responds by raising a handgun in his left hand, and the woman accompanying him steps between him and the police. And they say, "Put your hands up, Jeremy," one officer yells, and drop the gun. Jeremy dropped the gun. Officers take cover behind an exterior wall of the apartment complex, an estimated 90 feet away, while repeatedly giving commands. Now, cell phone video is being filmed by a resident. It shows our bad guy gripping a handgun with both hands, and he pointing it in the direction of the police officers. Now, the woman with him, she moves off to the left. Southern, our bad guy, continues to point the gun as he pulls out a cell phone, and now he holds the cell phone to his face. He approaches the door of the apartment building, and then he moves back to the courtyard. Thank God he didn't get inside. Now, Jeremy dropped the gun. It's not worth it. An officer says, "Jeremy dropped the gun. We don't want to shoot you." Crap. Minute and a half. I see one of the officers can be heard saying that he sees people in a lobby of the apartment building behind Southern. An officer armed with a rifle arrives at the scene, chambers around as he sprints to the officers who are giving commands to Southern. The officer then takes a position, announces that he's going to take a shot. So Brett already loves this guy, I can tell you. So the cell phone video, it shows our bad guy being hit in the abdomen. He falls to the ground, and then the gun falls a few feet in front of him to his right. The officer armed with a rifle can be heard saying, if he crawls forward, I'm taking another shot. So about 7 seconds later, what happens? The officer fires a second shot. Our bad guy does not appear to move again. So a few minutes after the second shot, 8 officers move in towards him, 2 of them carrying shields. They give medical aid. 2 officers handcuff the woman as she lies on the ground. Southern, our bad guy, transported to a hospital, dies of his wounds. I got slammed on YouTube for saying justice was served because they thought that that was inappropriate. However, justice was served in this case. So Chief John Newman.
You know, to the average layperson, you know, why didn't we wait? First of all, I think the officers who first got there, 90 feet's a long way, Brett. You know, that they showed great restraint, knowing that, I'm just telling you, knowing that you got a guy showing up with a 30-30. Because, you know, think about it. If you're in a housing project, if you miss, it looked like it was a glass lobby. So there, you do have to worry about what's behind him. I know they gave him a bunch of commands, but the fact that they waited, I don't know if they knew a rifle was coming or whatever, because when the rifle got on scene, the timing and the amount of warnings was pretty measured. Like, knock it off or we're going to shoot you. But he never took any of that advice. He never listened to any of the commands. He didn't even make the attempt to put the gun down. I'm glad that the guys with the pistol waited for the rifle. Maybe that wasn't their plan, but it worked out that way. But you're right, Chip. You know, this is horrible. It's tragic to watch. The guy put it right on target. And you have a young guy that's dead. They knew him. So that, you know, they obviously he dealt with him before, but all he had to do was comply and he would be here right now and we wouldn't even be talking about this video. What happens if he gets, now you can do the what ifs. He gets inside the building. You have kids. You have that one lady. What the hell was she thinking? The girlfriend or whoever he was with. She was just nothing but getting in the way. It was tragic, but I don't have one issue with this shooting whatsoever.
Now, thank you, Chief John. David, before you go, I know I always seem to do this to you, David, but I got to talk about one of our sponsors, Column Case Management. Are you tired of case and record management systems that are difficult to use, inaccurate, and hard to report off of? And how about help desks that take hours to respond to simple questions that should just take seconds to answer? So check out Column Case Management, state-of-the-art investigative software. This is what they do. With a 24-hour help desk, they respond within 30 to 45 seconds. And besides great customer service, investigators choose Column Case's modern software platform for the following reasons. Their software actually makes it easier to enter and manage data through the life cycle of the case. And with their link analysis module, investigators and analysts, they can actually effortlessly connect the dots throughout the case life cycle. You can quickly drag and drop any size attachments, including video, into the case. And their smart reporting, I guess it helps generate reports with a click of a button or on a schedule. So they've got a lot of good advances. Now, a couple other things for law enforcement agencies, their community policing module, it tracks, manages, and prioritizes all complaints and plans that citizens submit. And with their mobile first technology, which I like, you can actually use your smartphone, laptop, or your desktop, and you can have the same functionality. So from the opening complaint to the case being closed, let Column Case Management manage the life cycle of your case. And Chicago PD is actually their largest client. That's huge. In their typical agency, though, it's only 15 to 30 investigators, so that's how small they can go. So for more information about Column Case, simply go to columncase.com or schedule a free demo by emailing info@columncase.com. We'll have more information under the video about them. David DiGresta, comments on the video.
Listen, I agree with John when he said that the containment was done very well. And I'm going to assume from what we were seeing there that the guy with the gun could not get into the apartment complex through those front doors. It was either restricted access, you had a key card or something that kept him from getting inside. I'm going to assume that because he walked up to the door at one point, he couldn't get in, so then he was trapped, which is good. So they contained. I disagree. 90 feet's not a long ways. 150 feet might be a long ways. They had nice props there on the side of the wall. It would have been a nice shot with a pistol. Brett will back me up on that one. I do like the fact that they waited. The rifle got there, although it wasn't a lever action 30-30, John. It was an AR platform. just to break you on that one also. And the guy that got there was very measured. He knew what he was there to do, and he did it very nicely, very good job. The guy walked over, had a good backdrop away from the glass windows. He took the shot, put him down, and then talked through the second shot, which I'm sure Brett was having some sort of a sexual experience while he was watching this video. Absolutely certain of that.
Wow.
As was I will admit, watching the guy with the rifle work. Very, very well done. But this is one of those situations where, again, I have a difficult time criticizing the guys that showed up first for whatever they did, only because in this current environment, you get to that point in Sacramento, California, where you're almost damned if you do and you're damned if you don't. So I can't really criticize them for not, you know, because one guy was way down that alleyway first. He was probably within 20 or 30 feet of the guy as he recognized and guns started coming out. And why he didn't engage at that moment, you know, when he had that position, was that close, you kind of go, why didn't you engage? But for them to back up like that, again, I start having trouble criticizing these things these days because of that atmosphere that you're building into it. And these cops have to protect themselves, not just from the bad guy, but from that knife in their back that Brett talks about. But other than that, the thing went off well. The right person ended up dying. Nobody else did. Hopefully they took the girl and slapped her a couple of times because she kept saying, oh, he's such a good man. And I'm going, oh, Jesus, as slapped her around a few times and got rid of her. But other than that, overall, a very well done, contained, did the right thing, right guy got killed, job.
Thanks, David. Captain Brett closes out. We got some more videos coming up. Go ahead.
I think it was a good shoot. It shows exactly why the AR platform is important in police work. It gives you that standoff ability. The guys had good commands. Nobody seemed to be screaming and shouting. Everybody seemed to be calm and in control. So I was really liking it.
Sweet. I'll bet you were liking that, Brett. All right. I've got an update here. No charges for the officer in the Michael Brown case. Gosh, this is the third time this guy's been cleared. So Michael Brown, we're talking Ferguson. We're talking about Officer Darren Wilson. I know the story well. DOJ uncovered all the corruption, the hands up, don't shoot. That's a bunch of that's a crock of crap. And of course, you know, Michael Brown, you know, our strong arm robber, you know, who fought over the gun, fired in the car. And then, you know, after he exited the car and after, you know, pulling the trigger, comes back and charges Darren Wilson. That guy's out of a law enforcement career, but he's actually been cleared three times now. Why they're still looking at this stuff and why it's still news, it just blows my mind. But, too bad Darren Wilson had to get out of law enforcement and he fears for safety, had to change his name. That's just that is a travesty, and that should be a crime, especially the people that lied about that, because Black Lives Matter still uses that as their spearhead for their, you know, for their efforts behind their cause. And it's just all BS. So moving along here, let's go to our next video, police1.com. Police officer, we're still in California, David, put on administrative leave after a video of him kicking and dragging a woman emerges. So it's a San Jose police officer who kicked and dragged a woman during an arrest, was placed on administrative leave while the department investigates the use of force incident. So police arrested Guadalupe Esperanza Marin, 39 years old, of San Jose, Wednesday in a McDonald's parking lot. Officers stopped Marin because the vehicle evaded police earlier that day on July the 18th. Officers used force during the arrest after the suspect failed to comply with their commands. So here we go, John, another failure to comply again. Bystander recorded the video, of course, of the encounter in the parking lot. It was shared on social media, 10,000 views on Twitter. On the video, the officer kicks Marin in the abdomen while she kneels on the ground outside the car. He appears to punch her, shove her to the ground, according to the article, in a face-down position and handcuff her. The officer then drags her face down across the pavement by the arms. It didn't look nearly this bad when I watched the video, and I was thinking there could have been a plausible explanation if he was worried about another bad guy in that car that they thought maybe was armed or whatever, trying to get her out of the way or harm's way. I don't know. But a second officer talks to someone inside the car, telling them to shut up, stop talking, get out of the car. It's unclear who's inside the vehicle. So Marin was booked on suspicion of driving on suspended DL, possession of paraphernalia, resisting arrest. So that's the way that went down. If there's no comments on that video, we'll move on to our next one then. All right. Let's see this one here, police1.com and also Leo Affairs. Now, Florida man, this is great. John, you better chime in on this one. A Florida man jumps onto a moving semi-truck along the highway. Now, what state could this possibly happen in? Oh, wait, it's Palm Beach County, Florida. Just after 1 p.m., the Florida Highway Patrol, they get a call that a man was driving a Toyota SUV south with another man on Florida's Turnpike near Boynton Beach. So what's that, over on the East Coast? So the driver, who troopers did not identify, began acting strangely, and he stopped the car on the southbound exit ramp to Boynton Beach, gets out of the car, starts walking on the highway. So as he walks, he jumps over the concrete median wall and he into an oncoming northbound traffic lane. As cars started to slow down, he jumps on top of the hood of a semi-tractor trailer, and that tractor trailer continues driving north with a man on top of it. The man stated, I'm sorry, started hitting the windshield of the semi truck with his hands. Now, an FHP trooper eventually stops the truck, detains the man on the hood. There's a beautiful video of this. The Boynton Beach Fire Rescue, they take the man to the Wellington Regional Hospital for further evaluation, which is probably why they don't have any of this wacko's information, because he's probably still under Baker Act. But attorney Ward Mythaler, who's actually an expert in mental health, would love to get your input on this.
I was actually disturbed by the truck driver. It appeared to me he was trying to shake this guy off the window. He had to have been going at least 30 or 40 miles an hour. Frankly, if I were a prosecutor, I would consider charging him.
Dude, I tell you, he was going faster than 30 or 40 miles an hour, Ward. I'll tell you that right now. When he's trying to, I was curious, David, whether he was going to roll under some of those 18 wheels or not, but I don't know. Come on, David. Chime in.
I'm just telling you, you can start that out with, you know, you're a redneck, Wang.
Yeah, or you can tell he hasn't taken his medication, Wang. Yeah, I mean, the truck driver's given the good college try. Now, I will say that it was almost a defensive maneuver the truck driver was doing, because every time the guy had a hold of the edge of the hood, and every time he reached his hand up to smash the windshield, the truck driver started jerking the wheel back and forth, which made the guy grab a hold of the hood with both his hands again. So it was almost a defensive move. So I don't know, Ward, you're being a little harsh on him with the charging him. But, you know, if he'd have fallen off and rolled into the wheels and maybe got hit by two or three other cars that were coming, and maybe, but not, oh, come on. It was all good fun.
I like the guy's taping the video. Let me call the cops. No, I got to watch this. I got to see this.
Wait, I'm filming. Yeah.
Oh, it was beautiful. Beautiful. All right. So no roadkill on this video. So Veridian Fact Duty weapon mounted camera. It was born when the company owner employees watches communities around the country were literally torn apart. And, you know, they were literally torn apart and burned down over the lack of evidence in multiple officer involved shootings. So they used existing patented technologies and innovative design to create the Fact Duty. That's FACT Duty, which has become the only gun camera in wide use by law enforcement across the nation. So this gun camera, it fits standard police duty weapons and holsters. It records automatically when the officer's gun is pulled from the holster, provides an unobstructed view of critical use of force incidents from the end of the firearm. It overcomes inherent issues with body cams, and body and dash cameras were not actually designed to capture officer-involved shootings. However, Veridian gun cameras were designed specifically for that purpose. So the Fact Duty employs a 1080p high-definition digital camera with a microphone and a 500-lumen tactical light. And Veridian's proprietary instant-on technology means that the Fact Duty generates just a small fraction of the data to manage compared to other law enforcement recording options, because it only records when the officer's weapon is actually drawn. It results in significantly lower comparative data management costs than other evidentiary camera systems. So data stored securely and easily transferred per agency protocol with existing software technology. If you want more information on the Fact Duty, it's available at gun-camera.com. The next one I've got, Police One, Dunkin' Donuts employee charged after a LEO, which stands for law enforcement officer, finds a piece of mucus in his coffee. Now imagine this, John, in Chicago. You know, it was not what the officer planned to be Dunkin'. That's what they said. I'm just reading the article. An Illinois state police trooper about to enjoy a cup of piping hot coffee, he got a nasty surprise, an apparent mucus mega glob floating on top. Now, luckily, this cop had taken the top off the cup in order to let the coffee cool down. And he sees that someone apparently had hawked a generous loogie into it. Now, it happened about at night, 10:20 at night on a Thursday at Dunkin' on Archer Avenue in Chicago. I wanted to make sure I got that location out when an unidentified officer made his purchase. I wouldn't want my name out either if I was the officer. Now, here's a quote from the Illinois State Police in a statement saying that due to the coffee being extremely hot, the trooper removed the lid from the top of the cup of coffee in order to cool it down. The trooper observed a large, thick piece of mucus, which was later confirmed to be saliva floating inside of it. Now, Chicago troopers launched an immediate investigation into the source of the nauseating nugget. Who wrote this thing? By Friday afternoon, they tracked down the dastardly drooler, John, and solved the case of the slobbered sputum, arresting 25-year-old Vincent Sessler of Chicago. He was charged with disorderly conduct, reckless conduct, battery to a peace officer. Wow. Now, Attorney Ward, would love to get your expert opinion on this, and Captain Brett.
Well, the guy's conduct's obviously disgusting, and I hope they throw the book at him. But I have to say that I was also concerned about the article itself, trivializing what happened here, which is disgusting, by referring to this is the dastardly doodler or whatever they said. I mean, the author's trying to be cute, and I think it's wrong.
Oh, I was dying reading it. I can hardly get through it now. I don't know. But Captain, what do you think? Should he have been more serious in the article, or was it not?
I think he should have been a lot more serious. He should have said that the substance was put into a presumptive kit. It turned blue. We shook it. It's presumptive for snot. And we went ahead and booked him for possession of snot with the intent to spit into a cup. It's a felony in this state. It could be the death penalty for that guy. That's just nasty. But Ward, come on.
And guys, you know, we are out of time, so that is it. But wow, what a show and a lot of videos to boot. So hopefully you guys enjoyed it. And yes, we actually made a live show tonight. So thanks to Good Talk Radio, the Free Press, and also our big sponsors, Calm Case Management, Extra Duty Solutions, Guardian Alliance Technologies, GunLearn.com, Viridian Weapon Technologies. Hope everybody has a wonderful and a safe week, guys. Good night.